Everybody, this is Coach Park from the Humble Coach Podcast. Hope you're all doing fantastic. This is episode number 42. I had the fantastic pleasure of talking to the excellent performance psychology coach, Tony O'Regan, today. Tony has a huge level of experience, both as a high-level GA player himself, but more recently with some fantastic teams and individuals as a performance psychology coach. Hopefully you guys all enjoyed the show. I'll chat to you guys very soon.
All right, folks. So welcome back. This is Coach Park from the Humble Coach Podcast. So we're back with episode number 42. And first of all, thanks to everybody for all of the listenership. You guys are a great support. So really, really appreciate that. In today's episode, we are joined by a really, really excellent coach. His name is Tony O'Regan. Tony, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for inviting me, Park.
Great stuff. So, Tony, a lot of people will be aware of your... I suppose your recent enough activities with some fairly kind of high profile teams and activities and stuff within the GAA. But for those who don't and some of the new kind of listeners and stuff, could you give us a little bit of a background on your own either athletic career and your coaching kind of career and what you're currently kind of up to, if you could?
Yeah, I suppose sporting wise, I would have started off playing hurling and football maybe 6 or 7 years of age, which Rathen Newcastle and then with Salt Hill. And from there, developed into St. Mary's College, where I did 5 years there in the Leaving Cert and played hurling and football right through there. Lucky enough to play high standard in schools, probably A hurling and football. And from there, I graduated into the Galway underage sides, 14, 16s, minors, winning in All-Ireland at under 16 and under 18 level. From there, I graduated into NUIG and did 3 years. Commerce and a postgrad in economic science. Lucky enough to get called up to Galway under 21 squad in first year. Did 3 years with under 21s, and we competed in two All Ireland finals, unfortunately losing to Limerick and Kilkenny. At 19, I also was lucky enough then to be called into the Galway senior squad. Won the National League and the Railway Cup in my second season in 2004. Played my first All-Ireland senior final in 2005 at 21 years of age. Graduated out of NYG that year, went into DHK and then worked at Cavan for 3.5 years. Then the Galway seniors as a kind of dual career along with that, along with your club. From there I would have left and moved into Fintrax, which is a financial services centre, and worked there for over 5 years. And I played with Galway up to 2013. Winning another National League in 2010, nominated for an All-Star in 2010 and 2012, winning a Leinster title in 2012, and unfortunately getting pipped by Kilkenny in a replay in the 2012 All-Ireland Senior Final. So finished up my career around 29 years of age, a bit shorter than I liked, Park, but there the cards are dealt with sometimes, and from there it probably gave me a little jerk into a new career, and I started looking at maybe options outside of accountancy. After working there for 10 years, I felt I needed a change and something different. And a passion of mine was always sports psychology, so I started shortly route that time into a certificate in Dunleary Institute. Did 20 wins and nights up there, travelling up from Galway for a 2-hour class, but really enjoyed the new material and reading new types of research papers that were far more interesting than officer tax. opened up a whole new world of learning for me that, you know, I probably didn't feel I was ever as stimulated from learning. And once I completed that course, then it was a natural fit for me to go on and do a master's in applied sports and exercise psychology. Got into Waterford ID in that September and did a 15-1 course down there. And I think I was only 3 or 4 months into the course, and Jerry Hussey, who would probably be one of the best in his field, not only in Ireland but maybe worldwide, asked me to come on board with the Galway senior footballers. And from that, we struck up a great friendship and relationship and working relationship, and we've been lucky enough since to work with the Galway footballers for 4 years. Waterford Hurlers that year, who won the National League and got to an All-Ireland semi-final. 2016 then graduated to work with the Tip Senior Hurlers, and we won a Munster Championship and All-Ireland title that year. And I suppose I've been working with the Galway under-21s and minors for 3 and 4 years, and had some success with that as well. So they've been great learning experiences, and getting around the country and working with various clubs and sports and schools and universities, and all types of athletes from all ranges of sports has been hugely gratifying for me, and the amount of people I've met in the last 3 or 4 years has just been amazing, and I'm very grateful for the new career path that I'm, I suppose, 3 or 4 years into now at this stage.
Very good. So I think that's brilliant. There's a few different pieces to that we can kind of expand on. But I suppose, yeah, the main one there is that you mentioned that your career was a little bit shorter than you'd normally like, but at the same stage, it's a fairly compact and busy career in the time frame you had. So that was really, really good that you got a lot of stuff done. Obviously, missed out on a couple of potentially bigger goals that you would have set yourself and stuff, but still obtained a lot of them. Could you speak a little bit about how difficult that transition was from the playing and I suppose the team orientation as much as possible there, and then having to kind of not necessarily go out on your own a bit more, but making that bit of a bigger step. Was it from just the tiredness of working within the financial sector and just not really enjoying that much, or was it a natural kind of progression that you were able to just kind of go, look, do you know what? I'm used to being my own player, and now I'll be my own man in another field. Was it any of those kind of elements you could speak a little bit about?
Yeah, I think from the sporting perspective, from 17, 18 years of age, I suppose I was conditioned to go hurler, and all I wanted to be was a Galway hurler, and probably didn't have a great balance in my life for, I'd say close to 10 years. Sport was my purpose and my meaning in life, and work was definitely a distant third or fourth after family and friends and health or whatever. So I never really took a huge significance on my career off the field, unfortunately, but I still got through it, got good exams in NUIG, got a good education there, qualified the chartered accountant route, which is very difficult and very testing exams, and something I probably was capable of packing in a couple of times with the difficulty of it. So sport for me was a great release in the evenings from study and from the pressures of work and exams and all that together, and it gave me real fulfillment in my life and a great group of friends and a great network of friends for 10 years. And probably the first shock to that sport and ecosystem that I had was when I was probably 25, I got dropped off the Galway senior squad. And that was a very hard one to take for a young man who was only after playing in Ireland 3 years previously.
Yeah.
So that year I was, coming out of the accountancy exams, which I'd failed, and my contract was up. So I went on the dole for 6 or 9 months to get my repeats. I went training religiously every day to try and get back onto the squad, and 9 months of hard work ended up me, qualifying as an accountant, but also getting back onto the Galway squad and having my dream again of trying to win an All Ireland in place. So there were transitions that I suppose I went through in the middle of my career to give me a bit more perspective, and it did give me more balance when I was 27 going back into the squad, that this can't be the only thing in your life and the be all and end all of life. And I think I tried to enjoy the last 2 or 3 years a lot more playing with Galway, and I think I got a better balance off the field, which allowed for that.
Okay.
And then when I suppose 29 came and I did get the gun to my head again and dropped, I just probably felt it was having too much effect, Park, on my confidence and happiness, and I didn't really have the stomach to go again and try and prove people wrong or prove it to myself that I could do this. And I think that's when I really looked at, career-wise, could I find something that would give me as much passion as playing and much enjoyment and fulfillment as playing sport? And that's when I looked at maybe a career in sport, and sport psychology was probably the first thing I looked at from that point of view, and would dabble a bit in strength and conditioning as well. And it was always the mind, I think, that really fascinated me, that, when you got it right, what level of enjoyment and confidence you would get from it, and when it was wrong, how much it would deter you from doing the smallest task, be it around work or training or relationships.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a really interesting perspective on it, and I think a lot of people will attone to that it's rarely a straight over transition from one career or one kind of path to another. It's probably a few events have happened in the past, like you mentioned, at 25 and different things that give you a bit of confidence and a bit of awareness that you can look back and go, well, look, that didn't work out too bad. So we can always kind of push a little bit And you can kind of chance your arm a little bit more. You're a bit more confident, a little bit more ready to jump if you do need to jump. But I think some of the really interesting parts of this now, though, are was there any particular people over the last, like during your career, but also, and you mentioned Jerry and things like that, and people like that who are fantastic people in their in the industry. Is there any particular people that have had a big influence on your coaching philosophy currently, but even on your career, that would have really built your confidence and built your resilience a lot more? Could you speak a little bit about some of those potential influences and the people involved?
Yeah, I suppose I was fortunate through the GPA, which is the Gaelic Players Association, that we would have got personal development coaching and career coaching there available to players throughout their career. So for me, when I was thinking of changing, having that resource and support in the background was absolutely massive, as well as, you know, financial backing, be it around what course you're going next, masters-wise, and, you know, the financial cost of that. So, you know, there's a couple of people like Fran O'Reilly in the GPA who was massive for me around career coaching and giving me the confidence that, you know, going to become a sports psychologist, it's like, Anthony, you just put steps in place around your career to find the skills that you need, and then you step into it and start working in it, and you have a lot more confidence doing it. I suppose who's guiding my coaching, I think I'm very lucky throughout our hurling career to come across many different coaches and influences, and I think you take something from everyone, be it good or bad. And starting off, I think my own father was an absolutely massive influence on me, and he would have been a director of sport in NUIG for over 40 years. So just even meeting people, part students, you know, and the respect that I had from and how we would have helped them, I think, as people more off the field than on it, really resonated with me. I think I really appreciate that type of coach or that type of person who's, I suppose, person-centred first and athlete second, and, you know, who really cares about being off the field and how you're doing, and, you know, is able to be self-aware enough to see when that person is maybe down or maybe needs a kick in the ass when they're complacent. And I think that coach has always resonated with me over the years, and okay, I suppose, performance driven all the time, and I suppose that technical or tactical coach who's constantly on about match performance and sports performance and not really getting to know you and what makes you tick and getting to know you off the field. So that would have been a huge influence early on. I think people like Jerry Hussey then, absolutely massive mentor to me the last 3 years when I was making that transition from, I suppose, chartered accountant to sports psychologist in a field in Ireland, Park, that's not as well known yet, and no, maybe there isn't as many people self-employed in it. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the courage to go out there and cut yourself from a secure job and a safe job to go out and earn your own income and build up your own reputation and relationship with people that you might have to a certain extent from sports already, but, you know, fairly quickly people will judge whether you can do the job as a sports psychologist or not, and they'll have you back or not. So I think I had to, like a young player starting out again, I had to prove my credibility and my skills in that field, and that's been rewarding to see people coming back for repeat business or recommending you to friends or other teams or coaches. Thankfully, Ireland network like that, or I suppose we're small, but we do support each other. And when people do good work, it does get communicated, I suppose, around the coaching world.
No, I think that's fantastic. That some really, really excellent people there, and that network, especially the way you mentioned that, I suppose sports psychology isn't as it's growing absolutely in Irish terms, definitely, I think, but it's still at a lower level than it could be in the next few years. I just think that the amount of progress that people can make once, and players and teams can make once they integrate good quality sports psychology or at least person and player management, it can make such a huge difference to the teams and the people involved. So off of that now, so the change, I suppose, and you mentioned about going up to Dublin and traveling a lot while you were studying and being under lots of different pressure and stuff, and obviously as a kind of younger player and a younger athlete, you would have been, and especially even in your accountancy studies, there's a huge amount of dedication needed there. Is there any particular techniques that you kind of swear by, if it's morning routines, if it's not necessarily even goal setting, but I suppose a sequencing of different points. Like you've spoken before, I think, about meditation and mindfulness and their inclusion. Could you speak a little bit about some of the, I suppose, the kind of secret weapons that you've found help an awful lot, be it other players and including yourself and other people in your field, to really make good progress and be as productive as possible while still maintaining a good level of balance and enjoyment of the whole thing, rather than being very regimented? If you could speak a little bit about those.
Yeah, I think, I suppose if I was to give you an example, 2015 would have been a fairly chaotic year, and it's probably only when you reflect back on it, mm-hmm. you realise how much you got through. But in that time, I was working full-time as an accountant from Tuesday to Friday. I was down in Waterford for a full day doing lectures on a Monday. I was working with the Waterford senior hurlers, the Galway minor hurlers, and the Galway senior footballers, and I was still playing with the club myself a couple of times a week. So I had to get a thesis done that year and a couple of case studies as well that would have amounted to maybe 25,000-30,000 words. And you just wonder how you got through that without burning out. But I think what really stood to me was, from a young age, I was always balancing sport with the academic, and I had to make the best use of my time between part-time jobs, between playing sport at a high level, balancing the books. And I think I got really good at that at 16, 17, 18, that I couldn't really waste days or waste hours. I had to be very productive. So planning an organisation for a week in advance was something I always kept up. And, you know, I like to plan a week out what my week looks like. I think energy is a huge thing that people need to look after if they are going to be busy and not get overwhelmed. So for me, managing my energy would be making sure my sleep routine is very solid and getting to bed most nights at 10:30 and waking at 6 a.m. to get an early start and things. Eating consistent regular meals every 1.5 to 2 hours, be it small snacks or, you know, half portions of dinners throughout the day, would give me really good energy. Water, and I suppose reducing stimulants like coffee, teas, alcohol to an absolute minimum, has an effect on keeping my energy right. And I would have found over the last 3 or 4 years that meditation and mindfulness are a huge thing that have come into my life and given me space to think and time not to feel overwhelmed. And it also gives me great awareness around when I'm thinking negatively on something, when I may be a small bit impatient in people's company. And it helps me be not reactive to stressful situations, that, you know, when you're calm and relaxed, don't stress you, but when you can maybe frustrated or in a place of anger, you might react out to it. And that's not really good in front of a client or in a relationship with a person or around the team. So I think the mindfulness meditation piece has been a really strong thing for me to tap into another energy source in the last couple of years to help me kind of balance, you know, a life that is fairly chaotic at times for all of us. And, you know, it's very important that we do have something to lean on, be it a tool or a skill or an exercise to help us, I suppose, recenter and rebalance ourselves when we do get out of equilibrium.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, and that's those, I think a lot of people sometimes get wrapped up in they might need certain supplements or they might need a bit more of this and they need certain things. And whereas some of the more straightforward things, exactly like that, that we do, we need to get the low hanging fruit sorted fairly fairly strongly first before expanding on the kind of mad looking stuff and expecting miracles out of things that are very much just supplements or just additional pieces that you should be able to add to it. But you mentioned one thing really interesting there, that the challenge of meditation and mindfulness sometimes can be that, in my opinion, that it gets brought off to the side. So you'd have to meditate for 5 minutes or 10 minutes on your own at a certain time, and it can't be included within your normal kind of daily life. If you're hanging out with friends or you mentioned conversations with clients or things like that, I think the difficulty can be sometimes including that consistent kind of meditation or mindfulness within your own self-talk. And when you're in a conversation with somebody, could you speak a little bit about potentially about how you've been able to work on improving your own self-talk, or has it been a very big challenge for you in the recent past? And maybe some ways that the rest of us could work and help improve our own self-talk a little bit. I know it can be a very difficult kind of a subject to go with, because it can be kind of generic and you're like, okay, well, look, you have to just get more insular. But it can be difficult to find different techniques to try and improve your self-talk and build that confidence. So I don't know if you could speak a little bit about that, possibly.
Yeah, I think I suppose it's an interesting field, and you know, people say, do I have a conversation with myself? And you absolutely do. Like, psychologists will tell us that we've somewhere between 60 and 70,000 thoughts a day. So, you know, there's constant swirl and noise going in there around your head, and you're not going to pay attention to every thought you have. But the importance of it is that, you know, if you're on a negative cycle of thinking around a situation that you're involved in, or a work challenge you have, or a relationship problem you have, that, you know, if it's constant negative jargon that's in there, well, that's going to dilute your energy and your positivity, and you're going to act the same way around that person or that situation. So when you become aware of that negative self-talk, I think it's very important that you start listening to the language that you're using around it. So, I can't, I need to, I have to, you know, I should. They're constantly fueling, I suppose, a panic and a negativity and a fear mindset into you all the time around that situation. So you keep using that language around a match or a work problem that you have, but then you're going to fear it more and more, and you're going to start feeling that fear around it, and you're probably going to withdraw a bit more from this. You're not going to give 100% effort towards it, and consequently your performance will drop in work, or performance will drop in sport, or, you know, your relationship with that person will start to fall away. So, you know, you have to give yourself the time and space for it, I suppose, first off, to hear when you're having them negative conversations around a particular thing.
Yeah.
And when you have it, then it's about challenging that and saying, you know, is that 100% true, that that person is useless at that, or I'm useless at that? And when you start to challenge that and say, no, there's no real evidence to say that, well, then you're starting to dilute the power of that thought. Mm-hmm. And when they dilute the power of it, then the feeling starts to, you know, I suppose, dissipate eventually, and then you start to act differently around that scenario or that thing and view it differently. So I would always say there's probably two ways of looking at things. Either love it, like an All-Ireland final. It's about taking the mindset of, what do you absolutely love about the challenge of an All-Ireland final? What do you love about the test of it? What do you love about playing that game of hurling that you're going to bring to that particular occasion, that particular day? And when you start to challenge yourself to use them thought processes and that mindset, and then you start to feel a bit different about the challenge, and you start to act a bit differently towards it. Whereas if I'm coming from a place of fear, and what I'm worried about, and what I'm concerned about, and what I hate about it, then we start to feel less power and less control over the situation, and we start to act. So the power of that and diluting that negative and unhelpful thinking is so important to how we act and feel towards things. And, you know, the more confident and the more power you have going into situations, the better version of yourself you're bringing to it, and the more people will buy you, and the more you will feel comfortable in them situations. So, you know, can't be all positive thinking around everything, but it's important that if we're having unhelpful thoughts around something, that we need to actually challenge them and say, is this actually true? Because our mind can just wander into dark places that with stupid ideas, and start to listen to these concepts we come up with, and maybe there's no back into them or no reference to them at all, but we just have never challenged them. And they're just lazy or negative beliefs that are maybe holding us back in a work context or a relational context or a sporting context.
I think that, like, that's a fantastic approach. And I've like listened to different talks you've done before. And there's a really interesting kind of concept. And I've read it in actually a couple of other things there recently that it's just like you mentioned there, it's just a case of actually practicing that consistent improvement of self-talk and just awareness of whether this is a very positive thought or, okay, this could be just another one of those flipping by that we have, like you said, many thousands of them a day, that there's always going to be a few dodgy ones here and there. So you can't really catch a hold of every one of the damn things. But even then, if you do see any of those, anxiety-oriented ones, and that will build and then bring you back to some of the more lazy thoughts and kind of negative ones you may have had in the past, reframing that kind of anxiety or those kind of thoughts with that nearly a silver lining can definitely make a big difference in improving the actual, the quality of traffic going through your head, rather than being a kind of mucky road. It's very much like, okay, well, look, these are all a bit better now. If it's in my power to reframe my mentality towards certain things, as I'm excited about a particular element, a particular game or a work activity, or even something very simple, like the mentality of just being very grateful on a consistent basis, and just kind of reevaluating that can make such a huge difference when you reframe that anxiety as excitement or as interest. So I think that's really interesting the way you mentioned the balance of those, because they can help a huge amount in improving our general confidence levels. I'm sure we all have regular self doubt, and I'm no different, I'm sure, than yourself and many others, but we only have the one life, so we may as well try and have a bit of fun with it and actually reframe it in a good kind of fashion rather than being all annoyed about it, you know. So yeah, that's a very, very big help. I don't know if you could speak a little bit more on it possibly, or any of those elements.
Yeah, like I think it's part of the natural human condition that we do have self-doubt and we do have worries and we do have concerns. There's no doubt about that, be it the top level sports person that's going to open the World Cup final, or someone that's maybe just going into a pub to meet a friend for the first time. You know, we all have that self-doubt and that negative jargon that's in there, and you know, it can be debilitating at times and it can be tough to step through, but the more times we kind of expose ourselves to them situations and start to climb through them, you know, the easier it gets, and it's just a matter of taking that one step towards whatever it is that you're fearing at the moment. And when you take that one step, whatever little action it is, you know, it starts to lessen the power of that self-doubt over you, and you realize that this isn't the most unattainable thing you can do, or it's the hardest thing you'll ever do in your life. I think, you know, the perspective and the gratitude there, as you mentioned, is huge. And when we change our perspective through gratitude, it's amazing what comes into our lives and what we welcome into our lives. And, you know, taking a moment every day just to be grateful for food on your table, being able to sleep in the bed you have, being able to wake up in the room that you're in, being able to meet the friends you have. You know, everyone has something that they can cling on to every day that's making them feel good about themselves and make them feel good about it as a person. And when you do that, you change your perspective on life and you change your lens on life. And, you know, we're all the small things that we should be practicing every day to be grateful for, be it our own family, friends, you know, the opportunities we're getting, our own work or whatever it is. And when you start to come from that place, I think, Park, it opens up a whole new avenue for you and experience life in a total different context.
Very much. I think that, like, we could probably speak a long, long time about for ages about this kind of thing, but we'll move on just a little bit, and we'll bring it back a little bit more to your, I suppose, some of the very successful work you've done with different teams on a sports psychological sports psychology basis. Have you any particular thoughts on how, like, obviously, anyone in the potential know in the GA circles and with the media attention being shone a little bit more strongly on the GA with the different rule changes and just more high profile social media presence of the GA, I suppose. What's your current kind of thoughts on the inclusion of sports psychology within certain high level teams or even at a kind of a more club level? Is it making good progress, do you think, or is there still a long way to go on implementing sports psychology into those areas?
Yeah, I think we've a long way to go, Park. We're making a lot of progress. I think, you know, if you go to the States there in the 60s and 70s, they would have started a lot of programs where sports psychologists was like an S&C coach, an athletic development coach, and they're on all the books and they're on all the rosters, and athletes have 24/7 support from that. But so we haven't reached that level. I think the S&C boom has probably come in here in the last 10 years, and every club side now has one. So my hope over the next 4 or 5 years is that, you know, everyone in the club would have access to an SN or a sports psychologist on to help them around preparation and help them with their balance off the field. Because there's a huge amount of pressures in society now around social media for everyone, regardless if you play sport or not. And there's pressures there to look good. There's pressures there to, you know, I suppose that when you're playing at that level, there's always going to be abuse, but it can be multiplied now online. And so much articles been written, so many opinions, everyone can voice an opinion now online, that it's difficult for players when it's not going well, and to shield themselves from that is really, really hard and not be affected by it. So I think even young kids now growing up playing sport and stuff, it's a different challenge for them. And I think to have someone that can have a conversation with them around that outside of their parents or their coach, I think is so vital, and help them deal with it by giving them specific tools, whether it be, you know, practicing more mindfulness, you know, you know, becoming more aware of how this can impact them and maybe avoiding social media at different times or avoiding different websites. You know, it has such a role to play, because if that constant stream is coming into your subconscious mind and you're trying to go out and play in an All-Ireland final, you know, that negative thought process will come back to bite you somewhere. And, you know, it's so vital that someone is around there to educate and bring awareness to players on how to block this distraction out in their lives that has all of a sudden multiplied so much over the last number of years.
Absolutely. I think that's really interesting. The S&C boom, you're definitely right, is fairly on form at the moment, and it's, I think it's probably hit a bit of a tilt, a bit of a high point in the last couple of years, with so many articles written, so many different high profile people getting involved in the GAA and such a big push towards it. But like you mentioned there, I think the importance, and especially looking even more interestingly now at some of the club teams and stuff that are kind of giant killing a wee bit, and even some of the changes to the inter-county, the kind of, suppose, the championship, it changes the mentality of different teams, and they realise, okay, well, if we say, for example, Dublin is a GAA team, and both men and women's football teams being very, very strong characters as well as very strong athletes, and being able to build both of those makes a huge, huge difference. I think the bigger challenge is, like you mentioned, some of the different, maybe smaller counties or on a very club level, because people are, and all these players and younger players, they may not get to the stage where they are playing very high level, and they still have to go to work in the morning, they still have to go to college and stay very organized, and they might have extra pressure if they do go onto these higher level teams. But if they end up getting injured, they end up dropping away or whatever it is, it can be very, very difficult to try and maintain that positivity. So I think someone like that, like a sports psychologist or a mentor, can be a huge, huge help to those kind of clubs and teams to try and consistently build just good character and make sure that they stay involved in the game rather than losing into the game maybe because they didn't get the support over the time they were involved with them. And I do think that's one of the really interesting pieces recently. I'm sure it's a little bit different probably from your perspective, but the importance of the club, I'm sure you'll say, is the absolute foundation of the GAA. And because of the push towards, well, I suppose a little bit more of a social media orientation towards the inter-county, it can be difficult and it can kind of let people drift away a bit from the game maybe or not feel as important. So I think if those same types of support structures were put in for clubs and they were put in for some of the other teams, the minors, the under 21s, even the younger kind of teams, it could be a huge, huge help to building much more resilient and stronger clubs and probably structures in inter-county teams. I don't know if you could speak a little bit about some of those possibly.
Yeah, like that'll be a lovely vision for 5 years' time where, you know, you would have that support mechanism for all players in clubs and in county teams from 14, 16 up, that were someone in there who's helping them develop their character off the field as much as on it. And it's not just about sports performance and playing. There's a whole other ecosystem out there that, you know, needs to be tapped into and attended to. And, you know, you'd be given so much life skills to young athletes off the field to help them with, you know, the struggles of growing up now in modern Ireland is huge. And, you know, the club scene is such an important thing for giving people that sense of belonging and connection to their community and, you know, a whole support network of their peers that maybe you take for granted when you're playing in your early teens and 20s. But so as when I'm at the back end of my career now, you're able to see how much the club has done for me personally on a personal level and the opportunities it's provided for me to a pathway into a Galway squad and playing in Ireland finals in Croke Park. And I don't think I'll ever be able to repay the club for all it's done for me and how it's, I suppose, formed my character and helped me become the person I am at the moment. And I think every club is so important and what they can do in communities, be it heavily populated or small populated, from, you know, the great story in Longford this week to a Killmacode who is, you know, 5,000 members and what they're doing for that catchment area to, you know, keep kids involved in sport and what that'll do for their their mental health and their all-round well-being is massive. So, you know, the club has such an important role to play, and I hope the GAA don't forget to keep recognising it, and we don't get swamped by an inter-county game that has only a small pool of the players in the country. And it's so, so vital that we have proper fixtures in every county and keep the club game going. And, you know, at adult level, I think we're slowly beginning to lose adult players over, I suppose, a lack of fixture planning and a lack of fixtures during the nicer months of the season. And I think we need to be very careful of that. And Brian Coley spoke on it as well, that if that happens, I think we're going to start losing players to better organised sports, that they know the calendar of fixtures and they know when their off-season, on-season is on. And we need to be very cognizant of that and getting it right.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think it's very difficult for I suppose, because to almost to an extent you have every county has their own kind of ideas on it, and there's probably a collective now though of kind of tiredness of, look, these the fixtures need to be a little bit better organized to make sure that they can actually propel both the inter-county game and also still make sure that the consistency and enjoyment and progress is made in the club structures as well. So it can be a difficult one. It'll be an interesting one to see what kind of changes go on over the next few years. But I do hope that there is some improvements. I think now that there's a bit more of a conversation maybe at the higher levels in the GAA, at least now they're getting a bit more pressure to go, look, we have to actually really look at this seriously. But it could be a small bit enough just yet of so hopefully now, touch wood. But so we'll go towards the kind of last one, and I'll leave you soon enough, Tony, because you've been great with your time. We speak a little bit about the concept of either goal setting or actually more than that, kind of creating individual visions. So I suppose I've heard you speaking about different pieces of this before, but for me, something like the goal setting can be quite limited sometimes, or just the more common concept of goal setting can be quite limited. And because it's a nearly a cul-de-sac, and you're not looking at the next progression and the next progression potentially on that. Whereas if you have a start looking at creating individual visions or kind of longer term, I suppose, processes, it makes it a lot easier or a lot more interesting of a game if you're actually able to play numbers of levels. I don't know if you could speak a little bit about your own ideas on goal setting and vision creation, and which you kind of prefer, or if you're leaning more towards one, or ways we can even try and work on improving those areas ourselves.
Yeah, I suppose the goal setting that I would use with players in a performance setting would be a process plus performance equals outcome goals. So the outcome for a person might be to get to the Olympics or win an All-Ireland title. And I would say, you know, that's maybe a 12-month out vision or a 4-year out vision where, you know, you have very little control over it. So for me, it's about living in them buckets of process and performance, and, you know, looking at what's your best performance that you would need to produce in an All-Ireland final or an Olympic final to become the best athlete you can. And for a hurler, it might be I need to break down my game into pass completion rate, it might be catching high ball, it might be tackles completed, and they'd be the performance markers for them. Be it a swimmer then, it might be turns, it might be form, it might be stroke in the water, and they'd be key performance and process goals that they need to break down and work on. And then you bring it back to, well, what does that look like in the pool, what does it look like on the training field, how do you break it down into the gym to improve the technical aspect of it or the physical aspect of it. What do you need to do on the tactical aspect of it? And for me, they're the juicy bits then for athletes to develop their daily process and their daily habits around that improvement, and getting very clear measures every day and every week what that small, you know, 1 or 2% improvement looks like. And when they can test it then in competition, it gets a lot more exciting for them because they're seeing a daily progress and a weekly progress and a monthly measure to work off. So the 4-year focus all of a sudden is now narrowed down to this one session, this one match, this one week. And it gets them into a really good process and task-focused language and a really good task-focused habit. And there they see the importance of the gym session now. They see the importance of their nutrition, their hydration, their sleep. the mobility and the flexibility. They're bringing a different focus to the pitch session or the pool session now, because they have a measurement every evening of what they want to get to and what they're trying to achieve. And they realise if they're making small little daily gains in these and small little monthly gains in these, that after a 12-month period, they'll have moved, you know, somewhere on the graph as an athlete in the four key buckets around physical, mental, tactical, technical. And they realise, yeah, I'm making progress here. And if I layer that for a second year and a third year and a fourth year, geez, I've a really complete athlete now, or a really complete player. Yeah. And start seeing the rewards coming in, then you'll win your provincial titles, your national titles, whatever it is. And that's how it's really layered with players, that they're not getting caught up on, yeah, I want to have two All-Irelands, one now in the next 5 years. It's what do I need to move as an athlete or as a player now over the next couple of weeks and months, and how am I going to do that, and how am I going to measure it, and how am I going to see it, what would it look like on the field, what would it look like in the gym, how would I think and feel and move. And you start to, I suppose, imagine that player in July or August and how they want to think and feel and move in Croke Park, and what would they be displaying and exhibiting on the field, and start to create that vision and image in the player of what they want to look like in All-Ireland final day. And they can think about that every day, but then they realise the importance of the session this week in January is now more important, because I'm trying to create this player that I see in my mind and my vision for September. Well, these are little blocks that I need to put in place now for, you know, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months to get the rewards I want in 9 months' time. And I think players get excited then when they can, you know, draw up that player 9 months down the line and bring it back to my current day processes and what I need to do to develop that.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, the breaking down, like, so like you mentioned, that you could have this very, very long-term vision, but then you still have to have, I suppose, nearly a consistent reevaluation of yourself and where you're at on it, and the next version of yourself, so the three-month version, the next 6-month version, the 9-month version. Getting players and people to look at that kind of a sequencing definitely makes it a lot more accessible, but also means then they can break it down even further to the smaller weekly goals, the daily kind of goals, and they can see all of the more data, rather than within a lot of sports science and S&C kind of circles, there'll be a huge inundation of data to players of like analysis for this and analysis for this and this. And some players will be like, oh God, I don't know if I need all of these details. I need to tweak this small bit, and this coach told me I have to change this a wee bit. But I think once players start getting a bit more bought into, they're still a vital part of the team. They are their own athlete at the same time and their own person, even if it's in a work kind of scenario. It can be really interesting to break it into those 3-month cycles or 2-week cycles or whatever it is that you might be kind of working on. And it's almost, rather than the strength and conditioning kind of periodization, it's actually the human periodization of the process and those visions. I think that can be a really, really interesting kind of concept. And have you found, I suppose this is a bit of a different question, but have you found much of a challenge in helping younger players kind of build those visions, or has it been more accepted by the older players and some of the more senior, be it more experienced people in work fields or in training fields, that have been able to take that on board now and build a bit more with it? Have you found it easier to work with the younger people or the kind of more senior people?
I suppose the senior people have a kind of an idea of what they're doing, and maybe they haven't documented or timelined as well as that. So it's just giving them that framework, and they're probably doing a 6 or 7 or 8 out of 10 things already really well. It's probably looking at, you know, where are you falling off at the moment and what's the behaviours you're not showing up with and what you need to work on. Yeah. Whereas with a younger player, he's probably always been just given the information and not really been educated enough on what exercise helps with what, or what nutrition helps with certain energy systems, or etc. So it's probably educating that whole holistic approach with the younger players around the benefits of the gym, or the benefits of nutrition, the benefits of rest and recovery, the benefits of, you know, mental skills, and just, you know, starting them to implement it into their daily and weekly routines and really selling them the benefits and the why it'll impact them in 9 or 10 months' time when they're in that pressure situation. Because oftentimes they haven't had that exposure to an All-Ireland final. They're only maybe 16, 17 years of age, so they don't realise that, you know, if I'm not eating well, I could break down when my intensity and my training goes up. If I'm not practicing things like mindfulness or visualisation, that, you know, the week of an All-Ireland final, all of a sudden I'm feeling anxious. Yeah. How do I actually deal with that? So if I'm only trying that for the first time the night before the game, you know, chances are, like you know, it's not going to get the response that you want. So absolutely, you have to try and help them build them little processes in, you know, 9 or 10 months out, and get the education around it, why it's important and how it will help them.
Yeah.
And I think when you do that, they really soak up that information because they're just, you know, self-motivated to improve, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. So that's fantastic kind of points. We're going to change a little bit now, and I'll leave you in just a wee bit. But I'm curious, this has been a bit more interesting for me, but have you any particular either coaches or colleagues of your own in sports psychology, or even just younger athletes or even more mature athletes? I had a podcast recently, and one of the ladies was someone was saying that they love Serena Williams, and they're just fantastic athletes like that. But is there anybody you think that's very much up and coming and you're really, really liking their work at the moment, be it athlete or as a coach or a performance coach like yourself? Anybody you're really enjoying their work at the moment?
Yeah, I suppose I would read a huge amount, Park, and I'd listen to a lot of podcasts, and I think I'd spend a lot of time each week developing myself and trying to improve. So I suppose Michael Gervais would be a fella I would listen to a lot on podcasts. He would be a performance psychologist with the Seattle Seahawks and does a lot of work for Red Bull, and he would have his own company and stuff, and he would interview some of the top people from a range of sports and business and different backgrounds, academically or political. And I just find him a very interesting man, and his line of question very interesting, and his guests so interesting as well. And there's learnings everywhere for all of us if we can just open up our minds and read and listen and try and implement some of the stuff that's out there in the world. I don't think anyone's coming up with anything new or original, but sometimes we don't know what we don't know. So yeah,
exactly.
You have to open up your mind and listen to things you maybe never listened to, or read things you never read before. And you start to do that, you become more curious in every aspect of your life. That opens up a whole new pathway of thinking and a whole new pathway of learning. And the more rounded you are, I think, as a person, the better coach you'll be it in a sports setting or a business setting, and the better person you'll be in your relationships, be it work or romantic or other or family. And I think it's about opening yourself up to a broad range of people from different backgrounds and learning off them. And I think putting yourself in them environments and networking in them environments is so important, because we're great to learn off each other when we get into them sort of circles.
Well, that's fantastic, Tony. I'm gonna leave you to it, dude. And it's been a pleasure chatting to you. I really, really appreciate you taking the time. If people want to get in touch with you, I know you're saying you're quiet at the moment, but I'm sure it'll kick off soon enough again. Like, so it'll be hard to get you. But is there anywhere in particular people can contact you? Is it Twitter? Is it Instagram or whatever? Or is it just a regular old email? Or we called out of the house and
I'm on Twitter at Tony O'Gregan, and I'm on LinkedIn at Tony O'Gregan, and my Gmail is tonyogregan@gmail.com. So any one of them strands will get me fairly handy.
not too bad this time of year anyways, but in season I'm sure it'll be tough going. Well, thanks a million anyways again, Tony, for joining me. It's a real, real pleasure to chat to someone really, really in the trenches and doing fantastic work. So best of luck with all of the future projects, and really, really appreciate again you taking the time.
Thanks for inviting me on, Park, and really enjoyed the chat today with you.
Okay, folks, so you've just been listening to episode number 42 of the Humble Coach Podcast with the excellent Tony O'Gregan, performance psychology coach. So hopefully you guys enjoyed the show. If you'd like to check out any of the other podcast episodes, you can find us on Stitcher, on iTunes, and on our home base of podbean.com. You can also find us on Spotify. Hopefully you guys have a fantastic day, and thanks again for joining us. Bye-bye.